As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
644, 16 till 7. There have been some showers already, and it's going to be kind of on and off today. Rain thing, showers here or there. No washout or anything like that. I think we're approaching our summertime pattern. 70% chance for showers tomorrow and warm. There are 8 billion people in the world. 1.4 billion of them are Catholic. And as we all know, Pope Francis died. Bruce Jennelson joins us now, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am, sir. When it comes to diplomacy, the Pope is the head of the Catholic Church, 1.4 billion Catholics. But does the Pope carry any diplomatic power at all? I know he is the leader of these Catholics, but as a group, do they enter the world of diplomacy at all?
Yeah, they really do, you know, at certain times. You know, the old Soviet leader Joseph Stalin had a line when the Pope of that day, you know, made some statements that he didn't like, saying, well, he doesn't have any troops. Well, guess what? The Polish Pope, John Paul II, in the 80s, played a huge role in the fall of the Soviet Empire, right, in Poland and the movement there that broke free from the Soviets. And Pope Francis has been a strong voice, you know, for doing more for the poor, issued a major statement on climate change. And, you know, they can't totally change things, but they, you know, really can be an important player in a lot of this on the issues that aren't just nation to nation, but that affect, you know, the world globally and people, whatever their religion is, wherever they live.
And I knew you were coming on, and I was watching just as circumstance would have it. I was working out yesterday and flipping around a TV looking for something to watch, and I saw the Pope giving his blessing at St. Peter's Square, and I heard him, the priest read the prayer about all the troubles in the world, and I thought about you with, man, we don't realize that some big things get our attention, but a lot of the world is on fire right now. There are a lot of problems all around the world, and that would go to, I guess, some of the things in the presidential daily briefs.
Yeah, there very much are. You know, we talk a lot about the Middle East, and it's not just Israel. Not just, you know, it's really bad enough for Israel and Gaza and Palestine, but then you've got, you know, Iran, and then you've got what's going on in Syria and Lebanon, and then you look all over Africa, and many of these problems have different roots. You know, over in Asia, there's worries about Taiwan and China. So, you know, my joke for my wife for a long time for the work I do is that, you know, it keeps you off the streets, right? Mm-hmm. There's always something going on in the world that's not great.
So when it comes to Iran, I'm not quite sure where relations stand with the United States and Iran right now with the nuclear treaty that President Trump extricated us from. Give me some context on that, if you will, please, Bruce.
Sure. So in 2015, President Obama negotiated a nuclear nonproliferation treaty with Iran. It was, you know, a lot of opposition to it politically. But to be honest, it's an issue that I'm pretty involved with. It was actually working pretty well when President Trump in his first term took us out of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel was a critic of it. But some of the really hard-headed intelligence people in Israel were saying, it ain't perfect, but it's working pretty well. But we pulled out. And now I think they're trying to, you know, negotiate another version of that deal that would prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. And I have to say, these are probably some of the most complicated negotiations because the details really matter. Like, how much enrichment of nuclear materials can you do for nuclear energy that doesn't lead to weapons? And, you know, what's the regime? What are the procedures for inspection and verification? It's not the kind of thing you can fly in for a day or two, say we got a deal. And some people worry that the Trump administration, I'd love to see a great deal with Iran. Whoever gets credit for it, I'd love to see it. But some people worry that the Trump may want so much credit for a deal that he won't pay attention to the details, and it could be worse than no deal.
When you talk about the details, I remember looking into it. I think it might have been when the deal first came out with President Obama about the intricacies with uranium and enrichment and the differences between uranium, and people think all uranium is the same or it's easy to enforce this kind of deal, and it is anything but. Is that accurate, Bruce?
It is, you know, and people might say, why does Iran need nuclear energy because it has so much oil? And the answer to that is it wants to export as much of its oil as it can to earn money for it. So it's trying to convert some of its domestic energy consumption to nuclear energy, right? And the line between this and the procedures for verification are not the U.S. or even the Europeans swooping in and seeing it. This is where the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, that's part of the U.N., that the Trump administration likes to say the U.N. doesn't do anything right. These guys are engineers, and they're scientists, and they're trained, and they have some sense of knowing when they're being deceived or not, or how to measure these things. It's kind of like when we did the nuclear arms control treaties with the Soviet Union. You know, the details really mattered, mm-hmm. and that's where guys like me get out of the way and turn it over to the real engineers and experts.
And even then, they have some disputes, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's where, you know, right now it's interesting. Saudi Arabia, which opposed the deal in 2015, in the last 2 or 3 years, the Saudis and the Iranians have started to improve their relations. The head of Saudi Arabia sent his brother to Tehran, the capital, the other day, and he was received with, like, full diplomatic and military red carpet procedures. So as far as the Saudis are concerned, they're less worried about Iran attacking them now than Iran and the U.S., you know, getting into a dispute that could lead to a war that disrupts things for the Saudis. So there are a whole lot of folks. Prime Minister Netanyahu, frankly, would just presume see the United States go attack Iran militarily. But again, there are many in Israel, in their intelligence community, and in their military, you know, that would prefer to see a good deal than no deal at all.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Bruce Jennelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department on a Middle East peace process about what a deal with Iran could look like and what is the state of their nuclear capabilities right now. 651, 9 till 7, traffic WWL.
Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Six 55, 5 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to our friend Bruce Jennelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University. Previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process, so he has been there and done that, and we do appreciate you, Bruce, and value your opinion. So where does Iran stand right now since Obama cut the deal, President Trump got us out? I don't know what the situation is now. What inspections have been done? Do we know what they have or what they don't have?
No, they actually built up a lot once Trump came out of the deal. I mean, in some ways, they're saying if he's not keeping it, why should we keep it? And there were negotiations during the Biden years that didn't get to a new deal. These IAEA, these UN inspectors that I mentioned before, went in a couple months ago and expressed concerns that Iran was moving closer to nuclear weapons, right? And that's the reason why a deal is important, right? And so they're also weakened, you know, the military attacks they did on Israel, Israel's response have weakened them militarily. They've lost because their surrogates, as it were, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas, Houthi, have been weakened. Their economy is a mess. Their young people, you know, want a better life. So they're in a position for, you know, making a deal. They won't accept just anything, and you know, they're not going to. In fact, if we attack them, it would probably be counterproductive because it would lead sort of their own version of rally around the flag effect. So we could really get a deal that could benefit us and them, the Saudis, the Israelis. You know, we just have to be, you know, really kind of apply ourselves to it and not just go in there for the photo ops.
With whom are we negotiating? The theocracy, the Ayatollah, or the president of Iran? Who's running the country?
He has a cabinet. He has a foreign minister, you know, and many of the members of the cabinet are not necessarily, you know, Ayatollahs or mullahs or, you know, religious figures. But the structure of the country, the constitution that they have set up after their revolution in 1979 puts, you know, ultimate power in the Ayatollah, who's getting up there on 87, 88, 89 years old now. He's the ultimate authority. They have a president. They have a legislature. There is a degree of representation in it. You know, that's why you sometimes see, you know, chances in elections that some sort of opposition would you know, would gain some power and stuff. But, you know, and some of it, I think it's been in Oman, which is another small Persian Gulf monarchy that's been hosting the discussions. We're not going to go to Tehran. They're not going to come to Washington. So they usually take place in a small country in the region.
The Pope did mention in his prayers yesterday, talked about Israel and Gaza. Let's talk about the situation there, because it seems as though it's been, in a way, out of the headlines, or at least not front page news. That situation continues?
It's gotten worse. You know, there was a ceasefire that happened in the middle of January in which the outgoing Biden administration and the incoming Trump administration actually worked pretty well together. Mm-hmm. To get that, and it had a phase that had 6 weeks, going to go to another phase. Some hostages were released. You know, frankly, the violation of the ceasefire has been more heavily on Israel than on Hamas. And you've been seeing massive demonstrations in the streets of Israel from families and supporters of the hostage family. They've been there for over a year and a half now. And, you know, there aren't, you know, there's still quite a significant number left, or some may have died. And right now the Israeli military is going in. Last week there was an incident that they even had to admit they called a professional mistake, where they killed, you know, medics that were trying to provide medical care. And so this is so far beyond. There's even protests in the streets now by Palestinians against Hamas. And they're not pro-Israel, but they're against Hamas too. And, you know, it's very ripe to move on to nothing. It's not going to be perfect. But, you know, to try to move towards ending the violence, reducing it at least, starting to get aid in, and figuring out a way that you can start getting back on track for something that you could actually call a peace process. And but right now, Netanyahu's not interested.
And the Pope did mention a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. What are those people facing?
Yeah, and he has spoken out on that a number of times in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years that that's been going on. I mean, you know, people, when we had the ceasefire in January, you saw pictures, videos, you know, of Palestinians returning, you know, from the south where they'd gone to the north of the region. It's not that large a region. And just trying to, you know, get their kids in school, get jobs, get health care, just make some steps towards, you know, a life that's not as bad as it is right now.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate your time, insights as always. We'll talk with Louisiana State Representative Peter.